Amazon workers at a warehouse in New York voted to unionize earlier this month. It was the first successful unionizing effort in the big company's history. And the organizers who led it were newcomers who did it without the help of an established national union. We're talking about what this win, apparently, for organized labor means and how the lessons from it could shake up future organizing efforts. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about this vote to unionize this one Amazon facility? Do you work in a union job yourself? Have you in the past? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. John Shelton is an associate professor and chair of democracy and justice studies at UW-Green Bay. He's the author of Teacher Strike, Public Education and the Making of a New American Political Order. John, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, Rob, thanks so much for having me today on this blustery day out there.
Quite blustery out there, definitely. Well, a big wind blowing here, maybe for Amazon. Sorry about that transition. This factory organized, there have been a lot of efforts in the past to try to organize by bigger outside unions to try to organize facilities. How big a deal now is this news from New York?
Look, this is a huge deal. I mean, as you mentioned, Amazon is, you know, this enormous company. You know, its primary owner, Jeff Bezos, is one of the richest people in the world. I think he's the second richest person now after Elon Musk. And there's warehouses all across this country. And so for these workers to win a union election, in spite of all of the stops the company pulled out to try and stop them from winning that election, it's huge and you know, sets a precedent. You know, one of the things that's been reported is that, the Amazon labor union is now getting calls from Amazon workers all across the country asking, you know, how do we organize, our warehouse? How do we organize at our place of employment? And, as you said, the fact that this was an independent effort, you know, is causing a lot of people out there to kind of rethink what they know about, you know, how, these sorts of efforts can be won. And so it's an enormous moment.
This, as you say, this was a local effort started by workers from the warehouse, as opposed to what we often, I think of the model as that outside big labor organization comes in, helps organize the facility. How significant is that difference?
It's significant. I mean, I think the dichotomy, the way some people are framing it, is a little bit overblown. Because, you know, typically when there is, you know, an organizing drive, oftentimes, you know, a national union will lend support to that organizing effort. I mean, there are best practices, that unions in lots of different sectors, know about and know the best way to do it. So I don't want to understate the importance of having those outside resources. And any union drive that's going to be successful, it's not like, outside organizers come in and trick people into, voting for the union. What happens is there always has to be a sustained effort by workers at that workplace, to win the election. So I think to a certain extent, there's been a false dichotomy here. But it is true that a lot of pundits kind of said, well, without outside support, because the company has so many resources. I mean, Amazon held countless numbers of folks in the industry call captive audience meetings, where, the company on, workers' time at work, they basically, tell them all the reasons they shouldn't join a union. And so the Amazon workers, they actually crowdsourced funding for some of the materials. They got, pro bono help from labor attorneys. And so it did look like an operation that didn't have nearly as many resources. I mean, if there's a real David and Goliath story that we've seen in the labor movement in the past few years, like, this is definitely one of them. But I will say one of the things that might have worked to the advantage of the workers at Amazon is one of the things that employers often do at these captive audience meetings is they tell workers, you're going to be paying dues to this outside entity, this outside organization. Now, as I said before, that's not really how this works. Typically outside, support is just that, it's support for workers who are already organizing. But I think that it's possible. We'd have to kind of, do some more research on this. And I'm sure people will in the weeks and years to come. But you know, it's possible that that sort of standard objection that employers often use, hey, this is some outside entity that just wants your dues, there's no way to make that argument when, you know, there's literally no outside affiliation, right? So I think it's possible that that might have been something that factored into this.
Talking to John Shelton from UW Green Bay, looking at the union effort at a Amazon facility in New York, the first successful unionization of an Amazon facility. You can join in with your thoughts, your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. I want to listen to one of the organizers in New York talking about the decision to make their own union. This is Derek Palmer talking to the New York Times earlier this week.
We knew it was going to be hard. It was harder, you know, obviously resources, you know, money. That's what big unions provide. But the fact that we're the workers and we can connect with them, that's all we need to really know. The rest we just going to have to do. You know, it's going to be harder for us, but I'd rather do that and fail on our terms than going behind a big union and watch them make mistakes that we know are mistakes and allow them to continue that.
And that's been a concern from workers at the Bessemer plant, the Amazon plant that fell short in Alabama on a unionization effort. The sense that the people coming in from outside didn't get the local workers and maybe didn't take them seriously enough. Is that a lesson for a big union looking to work with say, Amazon plants in the future?
Yeah, I don't know if we can necessarily, you know, make that deduction. I mean, you know, we're talking about vastly different efforts here, right? And first of all, if I'm not mistaken, I don't think the second Bessemer vote has been finalized yet. I know that, you know, the anti-union folks have a lead, but there's still a bunch of contested ballots, and so it's still possible actually that you know the union there wins the election. But certainly, you know, the workers didn't win the last time, the pro-union workers didn't win the last time they had an election. But, you know, this is sort of an apples and oranges kind of comparison. I mean, for one thing, we're talking about the South, which has, you know, had a very long history of deeply anti-union ideology in a way that, you know, New York City, you know, there's certainly anti-union folks there and anti-union employers, but that sort of anti-union ideology hasn't quite been as pronounced in a place like New York. But you know, I think it's a worthwhile question to study to what extent, you know, the union down in Alabama, you know, coming in and helping organize, you know, might have been, you know, not as attentive to the rhythms of workers there. But, you know, one of the big things, I mean, there was in Staten Island, one of the big things that I think from what all I've seen kind of moved the needle is there was a National Labor Relations Board decision which guaranteed workers at the Amazon warehouse time to actually make the case to other workers about the union. And oftentimes in the past, it's been, you know, unions and organizing, even workers at a workplace have had significant limits on their ability to talk to their coworkers. And so, you know, part of this really does get to how labor law works in this country and how, you know, frankly, labor law is really, you know, sort of weighted on the side of employers at this point. So, you know, I think we'll learn more about, you know, the differences with Bessemer. But, you know, to me, the big takeaway here is workers win when they organize. You know, if you look at how unions are perceived in this country, unions have their highest approval rating since the 1960s. You know, economic inequality has exploded in the last 30 or 40 years. And actually almost half of Republicans see unions as being favorable, right? Because they recognize, I think more and more people are recognizing that unions are a significant part of the answer to reducing economic inequality and making sure that working people have long-term economic security. And so, you know, I think what cuts through all that is when workers at a specific workplace can talk to each other, can share stories about what it is that's actually making their working conditions difficult. You know, at Amazon, I know one of the points of contention is how limited their bathroom breaks are. I mean, that's the kind of thing that, you know, only workers at a work site can really speak to experiences like that and those sorts of common experiences. And so I think whatever happens, that's the real takeaway here, is that it's the workers at Amazon in Staten Island that put the time into talking to each other and organizing in order to win this election.
We're talking to John Shelton, associate professor and chair of democracy and justice studies at UW Green Bay, with us to talk about the vote to unionize an Amazon warehouse in New York, what it means for the broader labor movement. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want to see more Amazon facilities, other workplaces get represented, get union representation? Have you worked on an organizing drive at some point in your career yourself? What questions do you have for our guest? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about the vote to unionize an Amazon warehouse in New York, the first successful unionization vote in the company's history. John Shelton is with us from UW Green Bay. You can join in with your questions, your reactions at 800-642-1234. Let's bring out a caller now. Pat is with us in Green Bay. Pat, hello.
Good afternoon, folks. Thank you for taking my call. I've been a member of the IBEW since 1989. I've worked on organizing campaigns. I've helped out. I wish more people would, but I am so proud of those people in New York. I mean, they did what they felt was the best for them. And that's the biggest thing. You have to look at this as, this is how they felt would better themselves. I applaud them.
Pat, thanks for the call. John, Pat saying a logical call to better their positions in the workplace.
Yeah, Pat, thanks so much for calling in, because you make such an important point. You know, one of the things that I think too many people take for granted in this country is that we shouldn't have the ability to affect our work lives, right? And that we shouldn't have a say in our working conditions, and that, you know, we're just lucky to have jobs. But, you know, I think to your point, one of the things that I find so fascinating about what the Amazon workers here did is they said our workplace should be more democratic. We should have more control over our work hours. We should have more workplace safety. We should have higher pay, particularly when a company like Amazon is making so much in profits and have profited so much over the past 2 years. And to me, that's in many ways the story of American democracy. Is workers thinking about how that extends to the workplace. And you're absolutely right; these workers at Amazon did that.
Pat, thanks for the call. Jim joins us now in Wausau. Jim, hi.
Good afternoon. I'm retired. I come out of the paper industry. USW was my last union I was affiliated with. And when I listened to this, I sat at the negotiation table 6 different times in my 38 years. I listened to this, and a union, I was told by a rep one time, is no stronger than its body. The union reps and that are just the governing to give you guidance. And so many people is that, oh, I belong to the union, they got to do this for me. And then that's it. And then they complain about paying the due. I'll go back again. It's no stronger than its body. If the body is weak, it isn't going to last. You're not going to have much say. You're not going to get much accomplished.
Jim, thanks a lot for the call. John, he's talking to, passively being a member of a union and actively being a member of a union.
Yeah, Jim, I'm really glad that you called in and made that point, because it's really important. I mean, oftentimes when people talk about unions, even people who are union members, they say, well, the union is this outside entity that comes in and does things for me. But the reality is what gives a union power isn't who its elected leader is. It isn't even the collective bargaining relationship they have with their employer. What gives it power is the fact that you have a collection of individual workers all coming together and pushing for the same thing. And that's really what this election represents. So I really appreciate you making that point. And I think more folks, when they're thinking about unions and they're thinking about how unions build power and where they don't build power, they would do well to remember your point here.
Thanks for that call, Jim. John, I think if there was a movie, it would end after that successful union vote. This isn't a movie. There's a lot more that has to happen now. What happens with a new entity like this, a new union? How do the negotiations go then with their employers, Amazon?
Yeah, Rob, I'm so glad that you asked this question, that we have time to talk about this, because there has been a lot of, you know, sort of celebration about this, and rightly so. I mean, again, a successful union vote against Amazon is a true David and Goliath story. But, you know, some of the stuff I was talking about before in terms of the limitations on labor law really come into play here, and we have to think about this moving forward. And this actually may be where the Amazon Workers Union's decision to kind of go it alone could cause them some problems. So, you know, the way labor law works is workers at a, and this comes out of the 1930s, and it's been changed a little bit, but it's more or less the same as it's been since the 30s. Workers decide to have an election. They need 30% of folks at a worksite to call for an election. They hold an election. If a majority of the workers vote in the union, that union then is the exclusive representative for all the workers there. But once they become the exclusive representative, the employer, they're, according to the law, they're supposed to bargain in good faith. But one of the weaknesses of labor law, especially since the 1960s and 70s, is that there's nothing to compel the employer to bargain in good faith with the union. So I can almost guarantee you here that what Amazon is going to do is stall the negotiating process. They're not going to like just, you know, easily decide to agree on a collectively bargained contract with the union. So, you know, there are some best practices that, you know, sort of national unions can often help locals with when they're dealing with this kind of recalcitrance. But if the union is going to continue to be successful, if these workers are going to continue to be successful and get that first contract, which is really important, a significant number of union elections end up with union representation, but then the employer doesn't agree to a first contract and they can kind of fizzle out. So, you know, what's really going to be important here, to go back to the point of the last caller, is that these workers are going to have to continue to organize. They may need to do, you know, some kind of job action, like a walkout. That doesn't necessarily mean an open-ended strike, but a walkout or, you know, a sick out or something going all the way up to the level of a strike, which, by the way, they have the right to go on strike under labor law in order to provide leverage to get the employer to collectively bargain. Something like that's going to have to happen. And so back to this point of a union's only as strong as its rank and file, its body, to the point of the previous caller, that's what's going to have to happen here in order for the workers to get a contract.
Let's go back to our callers now. Jeff is with us in La Crosse. Jeff, hi.
Good afternoon.
What did you want to bring up, Jeff?
Well, I have a, I'm not sure how unions would tackle this, but it's just the overall inequity within organizations where you've got the CEOs making millions and the guys really doing all the work on the floor are the ones that are actually making the profit for them. So there's such an imbalance, and I really don't know how that gets taken care of, but you don't need $2 million or don't need $1 million a year to live on. I don't care who we are.
Jeff, thanks for the call. John, can organized labor in one outlet or even company-wide make a difference in those, what Jeff sees as inequity in pay between those at the top and those on the floor?
Yeah, well, Jeff, thanks for the call. I mean, I think you gave us all the material we need to, like, understand this question. I mean, so I was just reading in the New York Times this weekend that, you know, for the average worker who makes about $35,000 a year in this country to attain the same wealth as Jeff Bezos, they would need to work for something like 4 million years in order to attain the wealth that he has now. But what you said when you framed, you know, who does the actual work, I think is really important. So while Jeff Bezos was thinking about how to go up in a rocket ship, and this is something that, you know, Chris Smalls, one of the organizers at Amazon, pointed out, they were busy organizing. And, you know, I'll be honest, like, Amazon can't function. It cannot do the things that it does without the people working in its distribution centers. And so if those people, you know, organize and push for an agreement that's going to give them a bigger piece of the profits that Amazon is making, then that they can change that dynamic. And now imagine every Amazon warehouse in this country doing that. And now, and then imagine every Starbucks outlet doing that, and leading to many other workplaces doing that. And imagine how that could lead to tackling that problem that you pointed out.
Thanks for that call. We have just a few moments left. A caller on the line bringing up the Colectivo union effort in Milwaukee. You mentioned the Starbucks chain staying in the coffee world. Very different kind of company in both of those cases than Amazon. What are your thoughts just briefly on what those might mean, John?
Sure. Well, the difference there, of course, is Amazon warehouses are much larger than your average coffee retailer, right? So Colectivo Coffee, is a few retail outlets. Starbucks, you've had dozens of successful votes for Starbucks to unionize. No contracts yet, and lots of Starbucks outlets, the workers there, wanting to organize. What makes that a little bit more difficult is that you've got a lot of smaller workplaces. And so I think long term, one of the things that, a lot of people looking at labor are pointing out is that we might want to think about pushing for more sectoral negotiations. So you could imagine, say, all of the Starbucks workers in the country working together to create a better agreement with the company that, creates more sustainable livelihoods and better wages and better working conditions. There's precedent for that. In a lot of European countries, they have sectoral bargaining agreements, and we're far away from that. But I think long term, that may be something that we want to think about. And then you could imagine how a big agreement that covers Starbucks workers, that becomes relevant for smaller chains like Colectivo, because the kind of agreements they need to make would be kind of pegged to that, if that makes sense. So long term, I think, that would be something that would really move the needle for workers too.
John, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. Everybody stay warm out there.
That's John Shelton from UW Green Bay with us today to talk about the significance of the first successful vote to unionize Amazon workers in one facility, this one in New York, what it could mean for the labor movement in the United States.